Let's prepare for this one with a deep meditation. The subject today is addressing the world silently with peace. And we must underline the word silently. Now, the peace that we're to address to the world is an inner peace. And the only way we can send it out is if we first take the time to cultivate it within ourselves. And so we're speaking about an inner peace. In other words, a spiritual consciousness, which is the peace I give unto you to the world, which is in a state of unrest. And this is not going to be a peace that we send out with a destination or with an outline or with even a will or determination to send it out. It is that peace in you which silently moves through the walls and the windows of those homes where there are those who are reaching out to find the Spirit of God within themselves. We find that there is a peace that can enter through the thickest wall and find its destination, which is that soul seeking union with God. Now, many things come to light in this chapter and through this chapter. Much of it will be the outer consciousness of Joel expressing, and much of it will be your own inner consciousness released because of his upliftment. Now, suppose you took a rope and you tied it around one wrist and then you threw the other side of the rope to me. And I tie a rope around my wrist. And now you and I are connected. And you pull on your side of the rope, and that pulls me toward you. And then I pull on my side of the rope, and that pulls you toward me. Now, this is a condition that does already exist between you and every individual in this universe. There is an invisible rope tied to your wrist and to their wrist, and these invisible ropes are crisscrossing, so that there is no individual on this earth who is not tied to you, and yet this is not known to any of us, so that while the other individual tugs at his end of the rope, you move toward him. And the way he tugs at his rope is to think. His thought becomes the way that he pulls you toward him. And then someone else is doing it, and they pull you toward them. And when everyone is doing it, all are pulling you toward them. And by the same token, you are doing this to everyone in the world when you are thinking. So that we find there is a cross current of thought, invisible, unknown pressures of thought, pulling us, pushing us, twisting us, turning us, persuading us. And this was discovered by Jesus, by Paul, and in a milder form 1850 years later, it was introduced as the subconscious of man. Freud's discovery was a fraction of the real subconscious, because the real subconscious is the complete and total world thought, the universal thought. Paul, when he said, "That which I would do, I do not. And that which I hate, that I do." This was his revelation of the universal thought that compels each of us unknowingly to act as robots, as instruments for world thought. And Jesus introduced the idea before Paul when he said that the God of the Pharisees was a liar and a murderer. The God of the Pharisees, which they did not know he was describing, was world thought, the cosmic counterfeit mind. And he later further said, before Gethsemane, as a way of telling us what he was going to do and the purpose of it, "Now the prince of this world will be cast out." And that prince of this world that would be cast out again was world thought. He was going to break the barrier of world thought. "I will overcome the world of thought." Now this world thought is a world consciousness. And although each of us is enmeshed in it and may have the notion that we have an individual mortal consciousness, which we're to try to dissolve, you will discover, if you have not already done so, that you do not really have an individual mortal consciousness. What you call your mortal consciousness, through the hypnotism of the world consciousness, is actually it itself. The world consciousness which you express is what you call your mortal consciousness. And this was the hypnotism that Jesus uncovered, that each individual on earth was nothing more than world consciousness individually expressing. And we were calling it human life. He had come to bear witness to the truth, not to the shadow of the divine image, not to the imitation consciousness. And so this became his great discovery, that every man on earth was living as an expression of a false world consciousness. Which the Bible in the second chapter of Genesis called the Lord God. And the mist that came over the earth was the thought of this world consciousness. And out of that thought came the thought forms which we call human beings, which we ourselves represent. And this then becomes the human consciousness, or world thought, one and the same. And this outpictures itself as a thought form, a conceptual form which becomes the physical human body. All of this to Jesus was an open book. Now to break this hypnotism became the purpose of his mission, the purpose of his life, and it was a further clarification of the truths that unfolded through the prophets of old. Now we come to quite a number of secrets about the Bible. When Jesus discovered how to break the universal hypnotism, it was because he had learned that his name was not Jesus. It was because he had learned that his name was Christ. And he had discovered something that each of us now is going to imprint on our foreheads, that God is infinity, and that Christ is the name given to infinity, individualized as your being. God is infinity, and Christ is infinity, individualized invisibly. Infinity individualized is your name. This is going to be one of the most important things you can know, that you are infinity individualized. That every man on earth is infinity individualized. Each is the infinite one, and this is the miracle that Jesus discovered. Each individual on earth is the infinite one expressing and expressing infinitely, but appearing, because of the world hypnotism, which individualizes as a false human consciousness, expressing not infinitely but finitely. And this human consciousness had to be dissolved. Now then, as the way shower, he dissolved his own human consciousness. And when it was dissolved, that was the end of Jesus. It was the birth of the Christ. And the Christ now was infinity realized invisibly. The dissolution of the human consciousness of Jesus was his great contribution. And now Jesus was dead. Dead to the false human consciousness. And there stood infinity, invisible, named the Christ. And this was the summary of your being. This was the path that you are moving through now. The dissolution of the human consciousness to reveal that infinity. The expression of God called Christ is your name. Now, we have not realized that the Bible is telling us another great secret. When we look out upon this world and marvel at the beauty, we are marveling at that which the eye encounters. We see the great fertility of the trees, the lushness of the countryside. We see the fruits pouring off the branches. But never do we think of the message that is there for us in the specific terms that the mission of Jesus revealed. And that message partly is this. For every beautiful fruit-bearing tree, there is an invisible seed that was planted. And the death of that seed was the birth of the tree. All of the beauty, the fertility, the productivity, the fruitage, is all based on the death of a seed. Now, the reason that is out there for us to see and to gather this message is because it is the clue to us. The seed that must be buried is the false human consciousness. The burial of the false human consciousness is the first step in planting the seed which releases the infinite into your experience. Now, we have called the human consciousness illusion. I think in the light of a wider perspective, we will eventually dispense with that word. And we will see that the human consciousness is part of the divine sequence. But because it is only the beginning of the divine sequence in us at this point, We're calling it illusion. When it is properly planted, the divine consciousness will come through it just as the qualities of growth and fertility come through the planted seed. Now, this divine consciousness, then, is the infinite, and our human consciousness is the seed. Throughout the world, those who are in human consciousness, unaware that this is the seed which must be planted in the atmosphere of God, are trying to draw to that human consciousness more things that they want, preserving the human consciousness, perpetuating it, aggrandizing it, puffing it up. And so the scriptures tell us, vanity of vanity, all is vanities. And this human consciousness is the liar, the murderer from the first. Now then, to plant that human consciousness in the ground of God is the crucifixion of self. This is the true meaning of crucifixion. As the human consciousness is permeated with truth, the world consciousness, which is feeding it, is dissolved as far as you are concerned, and this opens the human consciousness to the divine, and now you are an instrument for infinity where you stand. The place whereon you stand is an instrument for infinity, and Christ is functioning as your life. In retrospect, we can see many passages in the Bible that were bringing us to this understanding. When we learned about the sower who went forth to sow, we only had an inkling without a specific, certain conviction that God was the sower and we were the seed humanly who was sown, who had to be planted in the divine consciousness. I'm reminded of a woman who phoned and said, I'm doing everything I humanly can do, and yet my husband lost his business, and because of it we've lost our home, the debts are piling up, and the partners who absconded have not yet been apprehended by the law. I read in the Art of Meditation, she said, that you can't ask for anything, so I won't. But it did say I could ask for one thing, illumination. And I'm asking for illumination. Now, to that woman, she was doing everything the book said. And yet, to anyone with even the slightest trace of discernment, there wasn't a word she said that made sense. I'm asking for illumination. Who do you ask? And here's somebody studying, but not really. Just reading words. Now, the human there has to die. And that's the one thing, apparently, this woman never heard of. The human consciousness, which is suffering so much, this must die. This must be crucified. This is only a seed. And the idea of drawing to this human consciousness more of this and more of that, more of security, more of comfort, more of the things of the, or the necessities of life, this isn't the idea. That's thinking in terms of a limited lifespan. It has nothing to do with spiritual consciousness. Now, as we draw back, we can see that the human consciousness is such a large seed that from the finite lifespan we could not recognize it. But first, in divine sequence, maybe over 5 million years, this human consciousness would be planted upon the earth. And then as it dissolves into the atmosphere of divinity, out comes the Christ consciousness, the next consciousness on earth. And all who stand in this rope-tugging contest, letting themselves be pushed and pressured and tugged by world thought from a world consciousness, are still being seeds not planted, trying to make a human lifespan, which is a seed, trying to make it the fruit on the tree. You see, in this work, you have to get back and see things from a timeless perspective, not just at this present instant of human thought. And once this becomes clear to us, we can now see that when Jesus was able to discern that infinity stood where Jesus stood, but that the Jesus consciousness was the interference. When he removed it, and only the divinity stood there, that was the rebirth, the resurrection. And from it came the ascension over human thought, over the entire world of human thought, so that in this ascension over world thought, the prince of this world, the human consciousness, was cast out. And then wherever this consciousness walked, that was really infinity expressing. Infinity showing that it is present everywhere infinitely. Now, as we follow that path, we will come to a place where the human consciousness that we are will be planted as a seed in truth. And through that seed which is planted, the divine self will come forth as grace. And where you walk, where you live, in whatever venture you may be, infinity will govern your life. And then you have the infinite consciousness replacing the limited, finite seed or human consciousness which was first placed on earth, and then from it the rebirth, the real self rising to take over and to live the divine life on earth. And so, if we are to address the world with peace, we must go about the business of establishing that inner peace first. And so we say to ourselves, how do I go about burying this human consciousness? Because it must be seen that until this is consciously done, the false personal sense of self will be a channel, not for the infinite, but for the finite imitation. Now, all of Darwin's work, even though it's been accepted by science and education, is all about the human consciousness, which evolved as human form. It was about this world consciousness evolving in a succession of lower to higher animals. And in the absence of recognition that there was an invisible world consciousness, Darwin fell into the trap, which Jesus did not fall into, which Paul did not fall into, but which the world has fallen into. And this trap of falling into the world consciousness, in fact, being born into it, from Adam and Eve on out to this moment, this by Joel, and by another Joel in the Bible, is called the lost years of the locusts. Those years spent in world consciousness instead of divine, those years are the lost years of the locusts. And they represent what is also called the fall of man. The fall from divine consciousness into the trap or world consciousness, which is also called the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. And resurrection is the breakthrough the world consciousness back to the divine consciousness, which is the infinite consciousness. Now you, in yourself, in your Christ being, are the light of the infinite. And you are told not to hide your light under a bushel. And so when the Spirit draws you into its pathway, it is to make you a center of light, a spiritual center, so that first within you is generated the understanding of the infinite nature of each man. And as this understanding deepens in you, you find that without any effort on your part, people who hardly know much about your work are drawn and they ask you for help of some kind. It's usually of a personal business nature or a personal domestic nature, but something in you draws them. And it is this understanding, which is your spiritual light, which is at a higher level than theirs. And soon you find that through these relationships that develop, when world problems are brought to you, you are not receiving them as other people. They are receiving them and they form opinions. They react. They become part of the chain reaction to world activities. But you already, having been indoctrinated through your own inner light and your growing relationship with others who are coming for that light, though they know it not, you're beginning to move toward these world problems and disarming them. You are addressing them with truth, so that instead of reacting, you are more able to see that this problem is not of God. This problem has no origin in the one source. This must be world mesmerism. And you see, this finds you in the consciousness that is not accepting and grappling with the problem. So now you are beginning to dissolve that problem by the mere fact that you are not perpetuating it within yourself. And so, to a measure, you have shed some light in the world. You might liken it to an ocean, or to make it more practical, a small lake. If you were to empty a hose into the lake, imperceptibly you would be raising the level of the lake. And if you poured more water into that lake, again you'd be raising it. So it is that when you let light into the ocean of light, you are raising the level of light in this world. When you are in possession of truth, you are raising the level of truth in this world. And this is what we're here to do. We are to be a light unto the world. a spiritual center for regeneration, for healing, for truth, to bear witness to what is, instead of that which the world sees through its counterfeit consciousness, its seed consciousness, which it has not yet planted. And then we become the good seed, not the stony ground, not the shallow ground, but the fertile ground. And now, as we continue to do this, we are taking our light out from under the bushel, and we're finding that through us, the light and the wisdom and the presence and the power of the infinite is slowly asserting itself into our experience and then eddying out as an influence first to our closest associates, so that we are the one in our own family who silently is a channel for the light. And from us, it eddies out to our neighbor, to our community, and so on, out and out and out, always silently walking through walls and windows, because spirit knows no obstruction. Now, oftentimes in our own domestic lives, we look around us, may feel a moment of sadness, realizing that father and mother do not have the light, and the father I worshipped as a child is now something quite different, as I get up close and see that this was egotism that I worshipped. It wasn't the light of the Father, the light of God. And now my Father has become my child. And I can see the child in the Father, the child that acts just like a child. And there are some mothers who have come to the point where, after having become grandmothers themselves, they still have their father with them. And then, as they take care of their father, they discover that this 80 or 82-year-old man becomes just like an infant. If they want to go somewhere, father says, "Oh, don't go, don't leave me alone." And if they want to do something, father pouts. They become just like little children. And it's very embarrassing to find that the parent you adored really hasn't kept pace with the times and grown with spirit as you have. Now, this isn't always the case, fortunately, but where it is, and this is mostly the case, wherever it occurs, the child, regardless of the child's age, is often in an embarrassing position. Usually the parent feels that he or she knows so much more than this child. And so there are all kinds of pressures upon the child. Father says do this, mother says do that. And the child can, if that child has not been centered in the light, can try to please everybody, can try to, in some way, move through this maze of differing opinions, and often the child itself loses a certain quality because it looks at the parents and it feels this hopelessness. Here's the people that are supposed to help me, to show me the way, and I recognize that they don't know it themselves. They compromise. They're trying to make their lives work out, but they're not able to do it. And then the child, unless well grounded, loses faith in himself or herself. And yet this must not happen. The one who has an understanding that the light of God is my substance, this is the real parent. regardless of the age of the forms around it. The one with the knowledge of the Father of Spirit, this is the adult. And this one must learn that the law of God in me supersedes all other law. There is no law on this earth but the law of God. And if I realize the light of my being and stand there, I am the light of this household, even though the parents are trying to advise me. And so I silently in this household bring the divine consciousness by planting the human consciousness in the atmosphere of God. And that invisible light, planted even in the child, becomes the light of that household. And it is felt. Its power is kindled. And it spreads. And in many a household where harmony does not reign, that child will bring that harmony by the quiet, silent addressing of the Christ in each member of that household. Now, we begin then in the home. But we have a greater obligation. And it is more than just an obligation. We have been taught to do unto others as we would have others do unto us. But we have always interpreted that to mean a sort of a fair attitude toward people. It's as if we were doing some good for them. But the truth of the statement is that we're doing good for ourselves. It is to awaken us to the fact that every time we recognize the Christ in the adulteress, in the murderer, in the thief, in the fool, in the drunk, in the obstreperous one, in any individual, when we recognize the light of them, we are planting the seed of our own human consciousness in Christ. None of us is so perfect that in our past there aren't things we've done that we would like forgiveness about. For our stupidities, our conscious errors, our subconscious ones, the things we should have done and didn't, and the things we didn't shouldn't have. All of these, we would wish that someone could forgive us, even that we could forgive ourselves and forget them. And so it is that others have the same wish. Now, having learned that all evil on the earth does not belong to that person, but is part of the universal world consciousness which functions as that person, we are among the few who can see the impersonal nature of evil, and our forgiveness is based on that. Yes, that man is drunk. Yes, that man is a thief. Yes, that man is a cheat. But world consciousness is the drunk, the thief, and the cheat, not that man. The hypnotism is that man. The reality is the infinite Christ right there as the true self of that man. And our function, if we wish to plant the seed of our human consciousness in the divine, must be to look out unto the least of these our brethren, whatever their relationship to us is, family, neighbor, enemy, and to bear witness to the truth, not to the world consciousness which appears as the cheat, the liar, and the thief. We who are trying to outgrow the seed stage, cannot judge from the seed stage without perpetuating it. It is our freedom that comes when we give them their freedom by recognition that the impersonal world consciousness is appearing as the form of father, mother, sister, brother, friend, and enemy. There is no form on earth, without exception, that is not world consciousness externalized. And it works in degrees. There are good and there are evil. And we will outgrow the evil, then we will outgrow the good. And then we will grow into the divine. But even our own form is world consciousness externalized. That's why it dies. That's why when you become attached to your own self, you're betting your money on something which cannot outlive this lifespan. And yet there stands the invisible Christ. And this was the seed then, revealed by Jesus, that had to be planted in the truth. The truth that where you see the form, you're looking at world consciousness, individualized, but through spiritual consciousness developed, this form will be transmuted from a world consciousness form to a Christ form, to the immortal form. And the process of transmutation will take place by the burial of the false human mind as a seed into the ground. And through that human mind will appear the activity of the divine mind, which will outpicture the divine form. This took it out of Darwin's evolution of physical man. Evolution of the world consciousness, which evolves into the appearance called man, and into the spiritual evolution, which Jesus discovered, of the Christ on earth. Now, forgiveness isn't a great big word, but it becomes important in our work because it is the recognition of the illusion of the form and of the activities of that form, so that you can look at all evil, and because you are spiritually endowed, you can say, I know thee who thou art the Christ of the living God. And although you will not say this to the personification of that evil, you will silently address this individual in your soul with that recognition. That's loving your neighbor as thyself. For that is the self of you, this invisible Christ, and that is the self of this personified evil, the invisible Christ. And this is how you are faithful unto the light of your own being, and how you bury the human consciousness. As you're doing it, you are releasing a power. And that power has no power that can be formed against it. Now we have today, for example, a missile program being discussed very heavily, an anti-missile program. And from it, if it keeps being discussed, you will find the beginning of a new world hysteria. The mere mention of it and the need for it begins to create in the world consciousness the fear that if this much money must be spent, if senators must argue about it, if the president must figure out ways and means to bring it to pass, and work his way through various blocks and various filibusters and various lobbies. This must be something that is in all of the minds of men. And this will create a convulsion in world thought. Now, there's no time like the present for us to be working in sending out our own missiles, our silent missiles of truth. And this is part of addressing the world silently with peace. We look out on a world, and we know our function as light is to eliminate, dissolve world hysteria, fear, and to send out divine love. And we say, how can we do these things? And the answer comes that only the Christ of you can do these things. And therefore, unless you are in the Christ self, you have no peace, no divine love, no silent missiles that you can send out through the world. You're not in the place where you can fulfill your function on earth, which is to glorify the Father. But because we do have a measure of enlightened consciousness, it is possible to say at this time that knowing the truth of our being, we also know that no weapon formed against us, whether it be a missile or lack, deprivation of some kind, poverty, bad health, none of these weapons can be formed against the life of God. And so when we are told that no weapon can be formed against us, we must remember it said, when you are in the secret place of the Most High, and that secret place we know is my infinite self realized, God infinity is the sum and substance of all, and therefore I am that infinite self. And when I am in the realization of that infinite self, then the life of God is my life. And in the realization of it, no weapon can prosper against me. How can any missile end the life of God? Now then, if a missile can end your life, you see your problem? Your life isn't the life of God in your estimation. And that's the separate life. That's the human consciousness which must be buried. The human consciousness is a life apart from God. It's what fears the missile. It's what fears the disease. It's what has judgments and condemnations of your neighbor. The human consciousness, because it is unfinished. Now, we have a great work then in the realization that instead of being tied to each other by an invisible cord of world thought, behind this mesmerism is the truth that we are tied to one another by an invisible cord of spirit. Right where you are is spirit. You might say you're touching spirit if it is easier for you at the moment. You're touching spirit where you are. But when you touch that spirit, you're touching all that exists in the universe. For spirit is all. You're touching infinity. And that means where you are working through infinity, and infinity is working through you. Spirit is infinite and indivisible. And so now, you being spirit, and I being spirit, we are one, and whatever affects you is going to affect me, and vice versa. Now when you pull, you're pulling me, provided I'm in spirit, and when I pull, I'm pulling you. Therefore, if you be lifted up, you lift me, and vice versa. You are one spiritually with every individual in the spiritual universe. And it is this knowledge which takes you out of the world consciousness, which made you one with everyone in human thought. To step out of that world consciousness into the spiritual consciousness releases you from all of the evil in this universe, and then no weapon formed against thee can prosper. Now, we have to review that consciousness which is one with every spiritual consciousness in the world. You are spirit, and you touch it where you are, and I touch it where I am, and we're both touching the same spirit. For it is indivisible, and it is infinite. So when you touch spirit, infinity is functioning where you are. You must have that in your consciousness. Infinity is functioning where you are. Infinity is another word for God. As long as infinity is functioning where you are, your neighbor 500 miles away is within infinity and is spirit, and therefore infinity is functioning through you and through your neighbor. And you and your neighbor are connected by infinity, by spirit. Now that neighbor may appear to you as a thief or a murderer, but that's the human illusion. The reality is that neighbor is spirit. And so you're connected spiritually to that neighbor. And that neighbor is connected spiritually to you. You're connected to your parents spiritually. And your parents are connected spiritually to you. And it does not matter if they're on this earth or not. You are as connected this moment to your parents, whether they are on this earth in a form or not. Because the spiritual substance, that is their name, is undying. You are as close to a deceased parent as to a living parent. In fact, there is no one in the past, present, or future with whom you are not now one in spirit, whether you know it or not. Just as these cords invisible were tied to your wrist and to everyone's wrist in the world, so are you one in spirit with everyone since, before time and after time. Throughout eternity and throughout infinity, we are one now. Going back as far as the mind can travel and as far ahead as it can travel. You are one with all spirit now. You might liken it to, again, that sunshine. It matters not if you know the sun is coming out tomorrow or not. It'll be in the sky, whether you know it or not. And whether you know your spirit or not doesn't change the fact that you are, and spirit is one infinite self, and therefore you are connected in your reality with all that is that spirit. And that means there's no individual who will ever appear in this world, who ever has appeared, or who is in this world now, who is not one with you at this moment. And that is what Jesus discovered, that the infinite is the individual selfhood of every man.